D-Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. The NFL Draft starts Thursday night. Thank the Lord. And to talk about the draft, we'll go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Hi, Trevor. How are you?
Adam, I'm great. How are you?
We're doing well. Thank you so much for joining us, as always. All right, Trevor, the first round of the NFL draft starts in 2+ days. We're almost there. Tell me what your gut is telling you that the Titans will do with the number 4 overall pick.
Adam, my gut tells me they'll pick Jeremiah Love because they have addressed a lot of needs on defense already through free agency and trades. And as soon as they took Cam Ward at quarterback with the number 1 overall pick last year, they made their priority building up a team around him that he can thrive in so that they will know by the time they get to his fourth year whether or not they need to give him a new contract as their franchise quarterback. And right now there just are not enough elite weapons on offense for him. Love gives him an elite running back. But more than that, a versatile weapon that can move from sideline to sideline and line up at any wide receiver position to take advantage of whatever the defensive personnel group is and get a matchup advantage against Love in space. And so I think they will go with Love for that reason. They could trade down, and I can see good reasons for it. But overall, I think that they'll stay where they are because the farther down they trade in this draft, the more likely it is they'll just get a good player instead of an elite difference maker. And this is a team that improved their good player roster with what they've done so far in the pre-draft process. Right now what they need is elite. And I think Love is where they will go.
Trevor, we saw a fascinating trade over the weekend. The New York Giants traded Dexter Lawrence to the Cincinnati Bengals straight up for the 10th overall pick in the draft on Thursday. And we discussed this yesterday. Clearly, the Bengals thought at number 10 that they weren't going to be able to draft an impact defender. So here's my question. Does the Lawrence trade make it more likely that a team will be motivated to trade up with the Titans to guarantee that they will get one of the top defenders, such as Arvell Reese or David Bailey or Sonny Styles?
I think it might. But I think when you say elite defenders, I think that just goes to the idea of elite player. And in this draft, there are fewer elite players that you can kind of count on that are a good risk, a good bet, that will turn into that in the NFL than there are in other drafts in recent memory. So I think, though, that trade was fantastic for both sides, though. I think Dexter Lawrence kind of has signaled that he didn't like being a Giant, you know, and with when you got new coaches and new systems and stuff like that, maybe he didn't like the scheme and everything he was going to be asked to do. And maybe they thought, you know, he was going to find a way to get out of here anyhow, and we don't want a guy that doesn't want to be here in our locker room. So it was good for him to trade out. But also for the Bengals, I think this is a direct parallel with the Titans, with Cam Ward. The Bengals have Joe Burrow at quarterback, and he took him to the Super Bowl all right, but that was with a terrible defense and a worse offensive line. And I think Burrow might be sitting there thinking, okay, is this team going to improve enough around me that I should be wanting to sign another contract here? And if they can't improve the defense, then Burrow will be in desperation catch-up passing mode late in games far more frequently than is safe physically to do. And I think he might be saying to himself, okay, this is good. They brought in a proven elite defensive game wrecker, and that's going to help me to run a more consistent offense. And so I think they did that with the thought towards Burrow in the same way that the Titans should be looking at what's best for Cam Ward. But again, I think the Titans have an opportunity right now to take a potentially elite player with the number 4 pick. If they trade down much past maybe 7, I don't think they're going to get an elite player.
Now, Trevor, which team do you think can sort of change the tenure of the draft? Is it Arizona at three if they choose to move out of three, or would it be the Titans at four if they choose to move out of four?
I think it would change it more if Arizona moved out of number three, because that means that somebody in there is desperate for probably Jeremiah Love. I don't know that you trade up for any of the other guys that are there, any of the defensive guys, unless you're totally desperate for a pass rusher, which somebody might be. But I think that a trade to number three would affect more things, because it would cost more than to trade up to four. I think from a Titans perspective, though, if they stay at four, it won't matter if somebody trades to number three and the Cardinals drop back out, because there are basically four players that I think, and maybe five, that the Titans could take at number four and get that elite playmaker. We know that at number one, we think that at number one, the Raiders will take Indiana quarterback Fernando Mendoza. So the other four that we'd be targeting, right, are Arvell Reese and Sonny Styles, the Ohio State linebackers, and Jeremiah Love, running back from Notre Dame. Those are the people. And then David Bailey, the pass rusher out of Texas Tech. And so you've got four players that you could take at number four, and only two teams ahead of the Titans to take them. So if somebody jumps into number three, it won't really matter, because the numbers still favor the Titans. And by the way, I would put David Bailey at number four in terms of priority. If I'm the Titans, I'd take either linebacker Reese, linebacker Styles, or running back Love if I'm in that position. And one of those guys is guaranteed to be there if the Titans don't move out.
Now, you did mention, you know, you believe the Titans will draft, but if they don't draft Jeremiah Love and choose to move down, that wouldn't be a huge surprise. But if you've looked at, you know, the hiring and firing of head coaches throughout at least the last couple of years, a lot of these guys have been fired because why? They couldn't generate offense. We can look at teams that had really good defense, and Saleh fell sort of in that boat where you had a good defense, but you never could get your offense. So do you think that would be a motivator for the Titans to take a Jeremiah Love, knowing that, hey, if we don't get this offense right, no matter what, we're going to get fired?
Derek, I think that's a terrific point. And remember that the new stadium is coming online. A lot of people thought they drafted Cam Ward, number one, in part to get people excited about PSLs and season tickets for the new stadium down the road. And it's not a very good sell to say to the fans, hey, we have a great defense and we are going to win games 13-10 and you're going to love it. No, if I want that, I'll go see the soccer game, right? Or I'll go watch the Sounds play baseball. Well, they'll probably get higher than that. So I really think that bringing in offense also helps sell tickets. Now, if the owner of the Titans puts pressure on the team to draft offense for the purpose of selling PSLs and season tickets, then the Titans are doomed and they will never be successful under this ownership. But I think that, so I don't think that she will do that. I don't think AB Adams Strunk will do that. But I do believe that the Titans coaching staff and front office do understand the bigger picture of the Titans as a business. And it wouldn't bother them at all to contribute to that by bringing in an exciting offensive player.
Trevor Maddux is with us. Trevor, we had a good discussion before you came on today about Mike Vrabel and his statement today, and I guess there were a couple of questions he took away from the cameras that didn't clear things up a whole lot more, and we were comparing that to the track that Diane Rossini has had to take. What are your thoughts on what Vrabel was, his strategy, I guess, about this whole thing today?
I think he's doing what he has to do, which is to say, address it so that he can say that he addressed it. And then move on, and the answer to the rest of the questions in the future will be asked and answered. Let's talk about this week's game, right? And so he did that, and nobody's satisfied with it. He knew nobody would be satisfied with it, but he had to do it in order to get to that next phase, which is asked and answered, ask me about my upcoming opponent. The thing is, though, there's a couple things involved here. And I think this is going to be a hot and heavy topic for a long, long time among the fans and you know, the media, for a couple of reasons. One is just the salacious nature of it. if it's true, boy, is it juicy. And I'm not saying that it is true or that it isn't, but that to me is irrelevant. As a former player, I look at that and say, well, whatever. People do what they do, and you know, if that's the worst thing you do in your life, you're a pretty good person on both sides. And so a lot of players would see it that way, and then they will want to transition back. The problem is what it does for the shield. In other words, the NFL is very paranoid almost about protecting the reputation of the league. And right now there are a lot of conspiracy theories rolling around out there that seem to have at least a basis to consider, right? We have Spygate with the Patriots where they got busted, I guess. I don't know if I should say allegedly. They kind of got busted taping opponent signals in a way that was illegal in the NFL, and people think that helped them to win games and win Super Bowls. Then there's Deflategate, where they were allegedly busted, taking some of the air out of the footballs to make it easier to throw, to catch, and for running backs to hold on to. And people think about just throwing the ball in bad weather, and if you can squeeze it a little more, that makes it easier to control coming out of your hand as a quarterback. But it's more than that. Because during those years that Deflategate was going on, certainly the year that they were busted, the Patriots were the team with the fewest fumbles of any team in the league, and it wasn't even close. And I asked Jerome Bettis when he was working at ESPN at the time about that, the great running back from the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I asked him if deflating the ball a bit would make it easier for the running back to not fumble, and especially in cold weather. And he said, absolutely, it would make it easier to not fumble. And the Patriots were best in the league at limiting fumbles, right? So these are conspiracy theories or truths, depending on what you want to do, that have a basis to hang on to. Then you've got others that are more tenuous, but that fans love to jump on, which is that the refs are making bad calls left and right to put their thumb on the scale because the league favors one team over another or one quarterback over another. Now, is there proof of that? I don't think there's any proof of that at all. I don't think that's existing, but it's out there. Now you've got a situation with the reporter that there's collusion behind the scenes, either because the reporter has a relationship with the coach or because the team is giving the reporter scoops in return for the reporter spinning the narrative in favor of the team. And now we've stacked on top of all that other stuff the concept that we can't even trust what we're being told about the NFL in the first place. Now, is any of that true? I don't know. But the NFL has every right to be at least privately very upset about this because it brings back to the forefront every conspiracy theory and credibility theory, and it brings back to the forefront the concept that people already kind of know about, that teams will feed scoops in return for positive spin. And the NFL doesn't want this to be the story.
So this is something that Christine Brennan had an interesting angle on that I had not thought of. And she basically said, from a journalistic standpoint, Diana Russini is guilty of knowing what the journalistic code is and knowing what the consequences would be if you're caught with that. Whereas Mike Vrabel doesn't really have to answer to the journalistic code. All of the other things you just brought in are definitely factors, and that is something to go forward with and wait and see if it, you know, in terms of the shield and the credibility and all that stuff. He's got to answer to that. But from purely a journalistic standpoint, is Russini more culpable than Vrabel? Christine Brennan would say yes.
Well, if this is true, then I would agree with Christine, just because if Mike Vrabel is feeding information to her because he's allegedly having an unprofessional relationship with her, it doesn't help Vrabel win football games. But the opposite side of that is very true, that if it's true, and I'm not saying that it is, that this relationship was occurring, then it would have given the reporter information that gave her a leg up on her competition in the world of reporters and career advancement and things like that. And I would see that if I'm another reporter competing with her you know, in this business, I would see that as a runner in the Olympics competing against somebody who was taking steroids, or a swimmer competing against someone who was taking steroids. All of a sudden, I did all the work in order to be on the pedestal as a medalist, and I'm not third, I'm fourth now, because somebody took steroids and they finished a tenth of a second in front of me, right? And again, whether or not the allegations are true, I am not addressing right now. I'm just saying, as another reporter, I would look at that and say, well, gee, no wonder I'm not advancing like I thought I should. It's because I need to do X, Y, Z with the coach in order to get the information that that person is getting. So you come back to the original question, Willie, and you know, the reason that if it's true, I think it has greater impact on the side of the reporter is because ethically, it is an unethical leg up in a career race that other reporters aren't getting if they're not doing the same thing.
Trevor Matich has been our guest on D-Mace. Vin Gidendonik, he joins us every Tuesday and is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, as always, a pleasure. Enjoy the NFL draft. We'll recap it all with you next week.
Great. Thanks, Adam.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on what Trevor had to say. And coming up next, we'll react to something that came out yesterday that I think we all sort of already knew, but now we have somebody saying it out loud. We'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.